see, because we want to have at least a few minutes at the end of all presentations for you guys to ask questions, and if we have some time to have some discussion, okay? So, without further delay,
I want to echo Anahi's comments. We feel like this is a very critical time in terms of what it means for the United States to have become a policing state in terms of immigrant experience in the United States. And one of the things that we were talking about in the caucus that I just wanted to put out there is that there actually was a review of a border deaths policy as part of APHA policy review. I don't know if anybody was at the meeting. I don't know if anybody has seen what it takes for any of the groups to put together an APHA policy statement. We thought the border deaths was, you know, a very compelling and very straightforward case, and our caucus contributed to the work that was actually done by the Environmental and Occupational Health section. We had been talking about trying to do immigration policy reform statement the way the National Association for Social Workers has an immigration policy statement about the stance of the professionals in the face of the increased criminalization and police action against immigrants in the United States. We felt that the time was not right, and yet we see that anti-immigrant sentiment has now been incorporated into the debate about healthcare reform. For example, you remember that the person who called our president a liar in a public forum was protesting the possibility that immigrants might have access to buy into public option plans. So one of the things we've decided as a caucus is that we don't think it's the right time to push APHA to do a full comprehensive immigration policy reform, and that's extremely complex. But the idea that immigrants should have the opportunity to buy into the public option or the collective health purchasing groups that are going to be created, and that to fail to do so is to create both a humanitarian and a public health crisis. So I just wanted to tell people that I promised the time of Darcy Alcantara and I, one of my PhD students, we're going to work with some of the other sections at APHA that have been doing legislative, you know, essentially emergency legislative responses, because it's really an urgent situation. The idea that we're going to resolve the battle over healthcare access in this country on the backs of immigrants, that it becomes a political tool, is personally horrifying to me. And I think it's really something for us to take on. You know, certainly the caucus feels very committed to that. So I just wanted to say that, and then you're now gonna see, you know, a little bit of the kind of impact and the way we think about what's happened in terms of the impact of immigration policy on the lived experiences and health experiences of immigrant communities. It's very hard to do this. Let me see. Yeah, so all I have to do is just click on that side. Okay. All right. So does this bring me back then? Okay. All right. I do this research at a public university with a Latino Research Institute that's celebrating its 20th anniversary. There's our logo. And this is work that I'm representing on behalf of my research team, which consists of diverse, predominantly immigrant, graduate and undergraduate students. We are a research university that tries to help both undergraduate and graduate students do research on issues of meaning to themselves and the communities. And one of the things that I was saying to Darcy, probably the most important thing that I wanted to say about this is that a lot of us doing work in this area of immigrant health, who thought we knew something about immigrant health, who might even consider ourselves, you know, experts in some way, really had a wake-up call when we started to see what it has meant to change what was the old Immigration and Naturalization Services, the old INS, into ICE as part of Homeland Security. So I just wanted to say that I've been working with my students, and every day I'm reminded of how easy it is to forget who's living in the shadows among us, what even my students who are immigrants have experienced and the burdens they carry. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do is to give both students and community members tools for contributing to knowledge, and that's part of what we're trying to reflect in this work. The New Bedford raids were a wake-up call in Massachusetts. They happened in March of 2007. They were only one of multiple massive workplace raids under the old, the previous administration, but the new ICE reorganization. I cannot believe that they would come, that we would long for the old INS. But the INS at least had Immigration and Naturalization Services, that is an immigrant integration mission, and some legal protections, all of which were discarded when ICE combined with ICE went under Homeland Security and became part of customs enforcement. There's a very creepy set of documents. I don't hide my response to this today. There's a very creepy set of documents that are part of the total quality improvement indicators as part of the reorganization of ICE. Because what they're essentially saying is that they have numbers targets for excellence, and those numbers targets are detentions. And what I'm going to show you is how that translates into community activity and community impact. I'm a Cuban Eastern European Jew, and so to think about what my family has gone through in terms of multiple immigrations and the hardships that they were willing to undertake to make sure that they created communities of protection for their children and families, to think about what my family was willing to do, and also the impact of the fact that whereas my Eastern European family traveled with a fair amount of illegality, my Cuban position gave me a lot of privilege because Cubans were part of the Cold War privileged immigration status. People don't know that the reason why Cubans are so much better off is that the Cubans started off so much better off, and that those are dynamics of immigration status in the sociopolitical context that we tend to overlook. And it's easy to forget the lived experiences and consequences of those status differences. So there's an ICE strategy to criminalize undocumented immigration. It remains a civil violation, but if you add identity theft or driving without proper documentation, there's a series of ways to elevate the criminal status, and that's part of what ICE is doing, in part to meet its targets and in part to say to communities, we're really only here looking for criminals. One of the things that we're discovering as part of our forums with ICE in the Chelsea community is that, I'm saying this now because it'll allow me to skip something else, is that in the new strategies for keeping the numbers up, you go into community with a list of criminals, and then the community says, well, of course we're gonna help you find criminals. And then once they enter an apartment or an apartment building, they then have the right to search everyone in that space. And so about 40% of their detentions are people that were actually on a criminal list, but about 60% of their detentions are people they found as a result of barging into people's homes. We've been holding community forums in Chelsea because the massive workplace raids gave them terrible publicity. And so they're now doing low-intensity raids and then something a little bit different, which was the American Apparel raid, where they're claiming to go after the employers and happened to go after one of the exemplary employers with really good labor practices. So there's a lot of human rights violations as well as violations of the contract we have in this country, for example, with, for the protection of employment. Let me just say that I love Barack Obama, but he does use the term illegal aliens, which is a term that is absolutely unacceptable to us in the immigration rights movement, and he really needs a serious education on the matter. So I just wanted to say that we're reporting on two qualitative studies from which we drew preliminary themes, Latino mothers' experiences in response to increased anti-immigrant climate, and that has turned out to be, because of our convenient sampling, it has turned out to be a study of isolated suburban mothers. We did not intend that. That was really a recruitment issue. We began recruiting in urban centers, and my student, Cecilia, happened to move to Marlborough, Mass, and we were actually able to recruit through a WIC there. And so one of the things that happened by the spontaneity of the research is that we actually have a very compelling and kind of tragic comparison of what's happening in these emerging suburban gateways. And then we have a second study, which we'll be presenting first, which is connected to community-based organization in Chelsea, the Chelsea Collaborative. So what we want to highlight here that's been very important in our thinking is some people who do this work go out of their way to find undocumented immigrants for their research. We decided that there but for the fate of God go I. We live in mixed status families. We did not, frankly, we did not want to have our list of families targeted by anybody. And so what we put out there was in our flyers, are you or some, you know, have you been impacted on by increased enforcement? If so, would you like to talk to us? So putting it that way is consistent with the Pew research, which suggests that most Latinos in this country are worried about anti-immigrant sentiment and enforcement because if it's not you, it's somebody else very close to you. And so we think that's very important. It's especially important in terms of thinking about the nearly 5 million children who are living in so-called unauthorized families and what that means for their resource access. I already talked about ICE, and what I wanted to say about the New Bedford experience is that there was a lot of mobilization in the New Bedford community. I don't know how many people are familiar with that situation. One of the things that happened was that in New Bedford, it happens to be a tiny little fishing village. They went into a seamstress factory. They arrested predominantly Central American many of the Mayaquiche speaking women. And it was very controversial because there were several nursing mothers who were forced to prove that they were nursing. And one of the nursing mothers told me that that was nothing. The real horror of what happened to them is that there were a few ICE agents that told them they'd already lost their children, that DSS already had their children. And one of the women said to me, I have never spent a night as horrible as a night where I spent in detention listening to the weeping of women who thought they'd lost their children. And they immediately dispersed them to Texas jails, and the Department of Social Services went in for family reunification. There were no separated families, and there was immediate attention to the rights of women with infants. They had a public information disaster on their hands. We decided there was a lot of attention in New Bedford. There was a lot of research being conducted in New Bedford, and we decided that for reasons of our connections, none of us are Mayaquiche speaking. We are white Spanish speaking women. So we did do some work to try to support the community-based organizations there as they asked us for, if you haven't seen it, Urban Institute did a report about the impact of large-scale work raids, paying the price, and I'm glad to share the resource bibliography we have electronically that has a lot of information about some of these emerging reports on children in immigrant families. There's the one thing we were worried about is that everybody wanted to advocate for these families on behalf of their traumatization, and we did not think that was a good place to go, because if you advocate on behalf of traumatization, all you have to offer is psychiatric services. We want resource rights for these families. And so that will, you know, we decided to move into the Chelsea work. The work is, you know, I'm a university professor and I love theory. I'm a theory junkie. We use ecosystemic models and participatory methods for our work. If you're interested in any of the stuff, I'm glad to share it. We're really thinking about this work in terms of the incredible creativity that immigrant families have to bring simply to surviving under these circumstances, but I think we have to also recognize that increased enforcement has had a big impact in terms of the fear families face in using and navigating services. So we have to acknowledge both that families are very creative in protecting the health of their families, and they're also under incredible stress right now. This is a very adorable little story that I don't feel like I should take the time to tell, except that the Maya K'iche' women were being offered support groups, and what they wanted was an opportunity to work. And so there was this sort of hilarious contrast between Catholic Social Services offering a sewing machine, but only during service hours as a therapy group, versus Maya K'iche' organization offering a sewing machine within one of the community-based organizations. So I think our models have to be really different than traditional mental health. What I want to say about Chelsea is that it's a, they passed an ordinance to become a sanctuary city, and immediately, like the next day, ICE was on the ground. They did one of their most notorious arrests at the Market Basket across from the Chelsea MGH clinic, and, you know, claiming to look for criminals. So this is the kind of, these were the kinds of raids that were happening. We have two studies, and I'm going to have to kind of go through them very quickly. They're very preliminary data, so we'll be sharing this data more in greater details very soon. We wanted to see what people's experiences were like in a community where a community-based organization was very active. Immediately, they called a community meeting after the first set of raids to talk about how could we join in an educational campaign? What could people do to make sure that they knew their rights and they protected each other, they protected themselves and their neighbors? This is the status of this project. Chelsea described as a community. There's a lot of awareness of ICE presence. People are very focused on their hopes and dreams for their children. There's a lot of stressors that have to do with, one of the things that's really coming up in the language is the sense that people are being treated like animals, and that to have this, to be a witness to this in these times has been hugely impactful. Kids are affected by the racial profiling climate. They're reporting that in the schools. Families are reporting their fear of using services, and this is in a community that's extremely organized, where the police signed the sanctuary ordinance. So I think if we see Chelsea as one extreme in which the community has everything possible going for it, except for, you know, of course, poverty and the things that a dense immigrant urban community experiences, one of the statements people were making, it's nearly impossible to get kids to go through life without experiencing something violent. And that we as a nation are contributing to that experience. People have had a lot of exposure to people in detention centers. The ICE presence is having a huge impact. People are starting to walk around with legal rights and calling cards so that they, even if you're a legal immigrant, you don't know when somebody's going to stop you. And if you don't have your papers, then you could end up in one of these, disappearing into one of these spaces of detention. All right, so since I have 1 minute, there's an enormous pride in people's ability to work. Family networks are very important. Which is what makes very tragic our suburban data. So we found a group of women truly living in the shadows. The incredible level of ignorance for women who were living in suburban settings about their basic rights. So the church was absolutely the only safe haven that they trusted. And because their networks of trust are so small, they felt like they had to be able to speak to another woman who came from their hometown and had some point of connection to their experience. The other thing is that a very important point of entry or connection into some kind of services were social workers working through early intervention or some other child-centered services. I think the importance of educating first responders, including social workers, who have access to immigrant children, couldn't be bigger. And one part of the work we did in the aftermath of New Bedford was to realize that all of us, even if we think we understand what immigration enforcement does to people, it's like if you're white-skinned and you have not experienced the full force of white-on-black racism. There are some things about that lived experience you do not know until you've been there or really listen closely to somebody who's been there. And we've all got to upgrade our knowledge of what it means to live as an immigrant in the United States today. Maybe what I'll conclude with is, Darcy, perdóname, but I think we're out of time, is that this has got to be about understanding what all of us can do, appreciating the health and mental health resource issues that these communities are facing. We can't just wait for them to come to us. We have to go to them, and our services have to offer more than pity. We have got to act politically on behalf of these communities.